Keith Kelly to lead us in the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Chief.
Morning, Director.
Good morning, sir.
Chairman, members of the board, thanks for having us this morning. Thanks for being here. Excuse me. Just a few introductions I'd like to start with. John Tellier from the Attorney General's office will be your independent advisor for any final action matters today. If you have any questions and advice. We're missing two board members today. We're missing Paul Ayler and Mark Dannels. Plus, we still have the two vacancies that we're still looking to fill through the governor's office. In conversations with Chairman Masher, we talked about some of the challenges with some of the chiefs around the state and other people getting to these meetings in a timely fashion and looking to be a little bit more efficient and better serve our partners. We came up with the WebEx product that we'll be able to use for video teleconferencing. So I got to thank Dan, Dale, and Hop. They're all here. Two of them are here. For setting that up, I asked them, I think, on a Monday. By Wednesday, they were already doing their testing, and by Thursday, it was all done. So they're in the process of putting together a short description of how it works. And when necessary and when requested, we will be able to pipe in a chief from around the state where you'll be able to video conference through the monitor there and accomplish the business without having them drive 2 or 3 hours to get here for the meeting. Again, just trying to be a little more efficient and customer friendly. So I was excited about that. And again, it's always nice to be surrounded by people who are such professionals that when you ask them something, they know how to do it and they do it expertly and very quickly. So thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate what you do. And the only other thing we're doing is we're, announcement-wise, we're removing number one under final actions, section I, the Luis Ruiz case. We need a clarification from the ALJ regarding the decision before we move forward on that for final action. So if you could just remove that from your agendas. I apologize.
Okay. Did you want to get into anything else?
That's all I have right now for announcements. Okay. I can move into director's report.
There we go. There we go. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just feel free to flow right along there.
Okay. The agenda is always a little choppy, I think, but that's the way they're done, I guess. Just to give you some updates on the budget, CJEF funds continue to be a little bit lower this year as compared to last year. Last month we did see an increase, but we're still about $220,000 down from where we were this time last year. But based on some of our vacancy savings as well as some of the reorganization that Jack Lane did over the last year, we're still in really, really good financial shape moving towards the last quarter of the fiscal year. As you know, we're in the governor's tentative budget for an increase over our appropriated funds from last year, and it's still in the budget, and we're still waiting for that to be approved. But that'll just help assist us in our basic training reimbursements to the different academies around the state. Just some personnel issues. New posting. Last month I had posted this, or about actually 2 months ago posted for the system administrator position that's been open now for probably 9-10 months. It's a very important position, but we're having a hard time filling it. I just reworked the advertisement, and we're sending it back out in hopes of finding the right person to help us with our IT needs moving forward, and I'll keep you apprised as we move through that process. And then, as you know, last month, Mark Perkovich left employment with Arizona Post. We are bringing in a new program administrator who will work on the in-service side of the house. Her name is Kip Rustenberg. She's currently a deputy chief with the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. She's going to be a wonderful addition. She's going through the background process now, and hopefully we'll have her on board the first full week of May. I believe that Monday's May 6th. So hopefully by next meeting I'll get to introduce you to her, and I'm excited to have her on board, and I know she'll be a great addition to what we're doing here. Just a couple other things. As I've told you before, I like to travel around and attend meetings around the state to understand what's going on in law enforcement. And last month I had an opportunity to attend the NALEA meeting up in Springerville. So it's a collection of our northeastern law enforcement partners. I was able to sit down and talk with them and get a lot of insight in what's going on up there and what they related to me. And I'd like to pass that my thanks along to Steve Entman, is the regional trainings that we're doing. We're hosting regional specialty instructor classes around the state, and they couldn't be more pleased that we're doing that in their area. So it's easier for their personnel to attend, and it's less expensive for everyone involved. So Steve has done a phenomenal job over the last year or so creating those classes, getting them online, filling them with instructors, which I'm told is not always easy, and then filling the classes. So, again, getting that feedback for me is very important. We continue to work with the Arizona Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. I talked to you about them about a month ago, where they wanted to change some statutes where we would have mandated training, but we thought it'd be better to work with them proactively, put it into basic, maybe some things into basic as well as in-service training. Last Friday, they were able to attend the Arizona COPS or the ACOP meeting and do a 10-minute presentation on their programs and what they offer. And we're working with them now to put together some video-based training. They'll be able to push out statewide, again, to give officers a better mechanism and better understanding of how to communicate with all members of our community. So, again, we continue to do that. And then I'll be looking to maybe get them on the agenda for the Arizona Sheriff's Association meeting next month, again, for about 10 minutes, just to kind of explain what they're doing, explain the importance, and try to get, you know, a little bit of buy-in with the sheriffs around the state. SRO training, some of you know the governor's budget's looking at bringing in additional SROs from around the state. As part of that, they've asked us to take a look at what kind of training we could offer. I attended a meeting with a member of the governor's staff and so several members of the House a couple weeks ago talking about that issue, and we started to research what that would look like. And we'd be using some of that additional appropriation money, if this comes to fruition, to provide that in-service training for existing and new school resource officers. And we would be the ones facilitating that training. We'd be bringing in outside facilitator. We'd put together the classes. And then just one last thing. Marie Dreyer will be presenting a little bit later on Arizona Western College and their transition to a full-time academy. Mm-hmm. I had the privilege of going down Monday morning to Yuma for their ribbon cutting and the first day of their first class. So it's an exciting adventure for them. They're really excited to be able to host a full-time academy down there. Again, for housing costs for their officers from that area, they don't have to leave home. They can stay at home when they're attending the academy, and they can start putting on classes opposite times from the different academies around the state to offset. So if you want to go to Waleda, you only have two options a year. Well, now you'll have that third option in that same region of the state to be able to get people on board. So that's exciting for us, but Marie will give you a little more information on that when she comes up. Then I'll move into current events.
Yes, please.
And like I said earlier, you know, I just wanted to touch on the rulemaking process. We've been talking about that at length since I got here 6 months ago. We're still continuing to work on that. Obviously, Mark Perkovich was the point of contact on that. We had a little setback with his departure. But as soon as Kip gets on board, we'll ramp right back up into that procedure again. It's a long process. Ben Henry is looking at partnering with a local educational institution to bring in an educational component to help us with our survey to make sure we're doing it correctly, make sure we're tracking the right information, and also maybe giving them an opportunity to look in the future and see how our changes in our hiring standards or qualifications are impacting the career in the future. So we're looking to tie it all in together and use this as a really good opportunity to, again, to better our profession and then learn from what we're doing. Just a couple of things. We're currently updating our background investigator school. Ben and his team are working on that, and we'll be pushing something out in the near future. That's something we get asked about quite often around the state is, can you put on that class? Can you help us help our background investigators become a little bit better at what they do? So we've listened, and we're updating that. The course had gotten a little stale, and they're just updating the curriculum now. Ben and his team also attended an East Valley background investigator meeting. Again, we have a lot of issues and concerns from around the state on hiring standards, what Arizona Post is doing today versus what they did a month ago, what's good here, what's good there. And talking with Chief Rodbill about the marijuana issue, there's so many issues surrounding that. There's so many different products that we wanted to make sure we're providing the consistent message to all background investigators. So Ben and his team went out there and spoke with them. I'm told it was a really, really good meeting, a lot of good information sharing back and forth. I think in the near future they're going out to Peoria or Glendale to do a West Valley background investigators meeting, again, just to open those lines of communication, just to make sure we're all on the same page. Because like I've told you before, We don't want Arizona Post to be an impediment to getting someone hired. We want to be an assist. There are going to be some people that are not going to meet our standards. We're not going to approve their hiring. However, we should be helping and in any way we can if those people can meet the minimum standards. We want to be helpful in that area. Again, marijuana use and CBD oil, it's a constant discussion. I just got an article this morning sent to me where a restaurant's going to be putting it in CBD oil in a hamburger they're selling, you know, in a couple days. It's a problem for us, and we're really trying to handle everything on a case-by-case basis. And we're also telling agencies, you know, if you have someone, bring them to us. Bring them to us on the front end. Let's talk about it. Let's identify the product they use and see where that falls on the scale. Because, again, I think we're losing some really good people based on not asking enough questions on what they used, where they used, where they got it from. And we're also, since we know there could be some changes in the future, whether it's through the Supreme Court decision on the medical marijuana law, or just some rule changes, that some of these people that are in the queue now, don't get rid of them. Don't stop communicating with them. Just tell them it might take a little bit longer for us to get them through the process. But again, it's become a very important topic of conversation in our office, and it takes up a lot of our time because we recognize that this is a very confusing matter to everybody. And if you read anything online or you look at the news, it's an issue all over the country. No one really knows, you know, who's going to regulate it, who's going to step in. So we're kind of at the forefront of that because it affects us so greatly in hiring and meeting our minimum standards that we're staying on top of it. And I'm just looking for some kind of resolution and maybe some consistency in the future to make this a much easier process.
So just a quick question. If we do have a chief or someone in the state or some of us approached, on who do we call here at ASPOS to...
You know, I would say if it's a chief, just have them call me.
Okay.
And then, if I can't answer the question, I'll find the expert that can. And then if it's someone else, just the compliance specialists do a really good job of engaging with their respective agencies that they're assigned to. So more than likely, if someone in an agency has a question, they know who their point of contact is here. But if in doubt, just have them call or email me, and I'll be more than happy to walk them through that. Because, again, I would hate for someone to be told no without us giving it a really full, thorough look. Because, again, I do believe we have missed some really good applicants based on just some misunderstandings.
Okay, thank you.
Another thing we're spending a lot of time on, and this will be incorporated into our rules-making process, is the waiver process. We're getting we have a significant number of people every month that waiver in from different law enforcement, from different states to our profession. And I just want to thank Marie and Cindy. They've done a really, really good job of explaining that process and working through that process. At the background investigator school, a couple different agencies asked for, hey, what does your matrix look like? What are you guys looking at? So we've shared that. Cindy has now shared that with the background investigator so they can even start the process for us, looking at, you know, when you're coming in from another state, what your training records look like and what you'll need to provide. So, again, just a thanks to Cindy and Marie for doing that. And then just if any of you have noticed, we've changed the way over the last year or so on how we do new hire or we do in-service training audits. Cindy now is doing all the in-service training audits, and she's putting a lot of miles on the state cars driving around because she's meeting with people and explaining to what we're looking for, how to document it, how to track it, how to get it back to us. And again, I think at first it was like, well, we've never done it like that before, but now what I'm hearing is very positive. Everyone's becoming in compliance. Everyone understands what the requirements are, and she's having much less issues. But again, as you all know, our state's very large, so she's been traveling all over doing that. And it's, again, like I said, it's getting very positive feedback. Again, just to touch on the specialty instructor courses we've been hosting around the state, if anyone has any issues, they're all on our website. They're all on in our system on what we're doing. But I think at last check, we have about 10 classes up there. Steve tells me, you know, in the last couple months, it's the most he's ever seen that we've had up there. And again, we really recognize the benefits of hosting classes regionally for the specialty instructors. In addition, Steve's added 10 different SMEs to the SME applicant pool. What he found was when he started looking at the SMEs around the state, we had a shortage of SMEs in northeastern Arizona. So he's really working up there specifically to try to add SMEs to that pool so they can do those regional training classes. So right now we have 10 SMEs additionally added to the applicant pool to go through that process. And the final thing I want to talk about is for the summit in Flagstaff in July. We host a four-hour training class. We've narrowed it down now. We're going to be hosting a four-hour class on officer wellness. Carrie O'Brien is her name. She does a thing on the seven dimensions of wellness, and she's been committed to us for that class. We'll be covering travel expenses, so the cost is fairly minimal to bring in what I believe is going to be outstanding training. I know it's on the forefront of every agency's discussions on a daily basis on officer wellness, so I'm hopeful that that'll come off really well in July to all of our members.
Thank you.
And that should do it for current events.
We in the legislation?
We can.
Okay, please.
All right. SB 1092. It was a strike everything amendment. And it was, I'm going to read it to you so everyone has a good understanding of it. And this came about from the Department of Corrections looking at, as you know, Arizona Post oversees the Department of Corrections, minimum hiring standards, training, and whatnot. Their minimum standards for age is 21. They had the desire to lower that to 18, which would be consistent with most of the county sheriff's detention officers across the state. So in this amendment, and I'll read it to you just so you know, but it's an exemption from rulemaking for Arizona Peace Officer Standards and Training Board. It says, for the purposes of adopting a rule related to the minimum age requirement for a correctional officer who is employed by the State Department of Corrections, the Arizona Peace Officer Standards and Training Board is exempt from the rulemaking requirements of Title 41, Chapter 6, Arizona Revised Statutes, for 1 year after the effective date of this act. They also included an emergency clause, so it becomes effective the minute the governor signs it, and that was done yesterday. I confirmed this morning that yesterday Governor Ducey signed this bill. So what I'm asking the board to do is, first of all, I'd like to have some discussion. If anyone has any concerns with us moving forward to amend the rules, changing the minimum qualification age for a member to join the Department of Corrections at time of graduation from 21 to 18. So I guess we'll start there. If anyone has any concerns, questions, comments, be happy to answer.
The only comment I would say is I think it's a very good move, and we've had to do it at our detention facilities just to get the applicants coming in, and it's worked fairly well for us, so I think it's a good.
If I may comment, Mr. Chairman and members, our department did this 30 years ago. And there's a number of people that have promoted through the ranks and are still in the agency that are getting longer in the tooth, but they had started when they were 18 years as well. A number of the CO trainee positions, which are people younger than 21, are in our agency, and they've come from the high schools or the junior colleges, and many of them are saying, I wish you would change the age. So we very much appreciate Governor Ducey and the fact that there was a supermajority in the House and a unanimous vote in the Senate to support this. And with 1,156 vacant CO positions, which is about 13.4%, and we have been doing 12-hour shifts and will continue into the future, we are very hopeful this will help attract people into our ranks, coupled with hopefully a pay package that'll go through this session. If there is no other discussion,
you want to make a motion?
I would like to make a motion.
Any other questions, comments, discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I just say one thing. I think it's great, Chuck, and I think there'll be a downside somewhere for you, is that these young men and women will find their way into law enforcement through corrections and want to further their career. But what a great way to get younger people involved and live a lifestyle that is conducive to what we need in law enforcement as they mature and become 21, 22, 3 years old. So good on you for doing it. Thank you.
And just for the response to what Frank just said, there's a lot of people that have migrated from the Department of Corrections to law enforcement. And in my opinion, they are much better law enforcement officers for it because they've had that experience.
Any other comments, questions? Having none, may I have a motion, Director?
Mr. Chairman, members, I move the board authorize the Executive Director to prepare and submit to the Secretary of State a notice of exempt rulemaking amending R13-4-202 to change the minimum age qualification for a corrections officer from age 18 to age, or from age 21 to age 18.
I second it. Frank Milstead.
I have a motion and a second from Director Milstead. Either comments or discussion on the motion? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you, Director.
Thank you, sir.
Just one more thing, okay. Chairman, if you would.
Yes, please.
There's been a lot of discussion at the legislature this year on Brady List.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to see if the board had any questions or concerns. The topic that always comes up is us being Arizona Post, being the keeper of records for the, it's always been a proposal. Should Arizona Post be the keeper of records for a Brady List? And obviously we could debate that probably for hours, but the one question that always comes up is, does Arizona Post have a unique identifier for every peace officer in the state? And my answer is yes and no. We have a database that we use to track officers as they get hired and they get appointed to agencies. And as you get entered in the database creates a SQL number for you. No one knows their number. I don't know what my number is. No one uses that number. It's just a record number. So I guess in answer to the question, there is a number associated with you, but no one outside people that have access to our database would ever know that number. And then again, I just wanted to open up to discussion for you guys on what your thoughts are, any concerns or questions about us, if that comes up again. Right now, it's not going that direction, but to be the keeper of this material.
I have a comment.
It's not really agendized for a discussion on this right now.
So I can't even comment?
Well, that's not listed. Right now, it's just a general update on legislation. It's specific to Senate Bill 1092. If you're going to get into a specific discussion about the Brady List issue, we're not talking about a pending bill or anything. It's kind of outside the scope of what the agenda is currently covering.
And I appreciate that, Seth. And I see we have a legislative update, and I want to make a comment on that. And my comment is this. There are real problems, I think, with the Brady List. Number one, there's no real due process for the employees that I feel is consistent across the state. And I think ASPOST should not be the one that houses a list for a statewide Brady, whatever you want to call it, a Brady List. And I think there are some things that need to be worked out, and I think we need to be involved in any legislative issues with that. We need to be appraised of what's going on with that. Right now, I would be completely against us housing anything to deal with that until these issues get worked out on how that list is maintained by each county prosecutor, how they get on the list, what the due process is for that list, and all those things. I just got issues with it, and that's the comment I want to make.
Mr. Chairman, where is this now? Where is the bill in the process?
It's not moving.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's a constant discussion. So I just wanted to keep you apprised that that's a constant discussion in the legislature, and I would assume it would come back again.
So, Seth, I don't know if I crossed the line with this or not, so I'll just say don't respond to it. But my question would be, okay, is there a cause and effect between going on a Brady List and notification of Post at the present time? Chances are there's not. My guess is there isn't. The question is, what happens when that occurs? So just a concern that as you watch bills.
Okay. Yeah, and like I said, I try to keep you apprised of all the bills that are going to affect us, and I've been watching that closely. I think we've talked about it in the past, but it's died down for now, but it still keeps coming up. It's still in a lot of conversations. I just wanted to make you all aware that it's still out there, and this discussion is not ending, and I didn't want anyone to get caught by surprise if it comes back up again in the future. That's all I have for legislative discussion or legislative updates. Can I go back to just one current event?
Absolutely, please.
I forgot. We've had several discussions about building design, whatnot. So we actually enlisted the help of ACTIC, and we're having them come out and do a vulnerability threat assessment of the facility. and that should be happening in the near future. We had to provide them with written documentation about the facility, answer a bunch of questions, and they're going to send out one of their TLOs to come out and do an inspection of the facility and give us recommendations on safety and security for the entire building. Just wanted to give an update on that. If there's no other questions or concerns?
Anything else for the director? All right. Sir, thank you very much.
Thanks, sir.
Been very busy, and I do appreciate you getting right on the video conferencing and their staff doing that. That questions came up, I think it was just 2-3 weeks ago, and already you got it up and running, and you guys are doing a good job. Everybody is. Thank you all very much for what you're doing. Appreciate it, Matt.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, we're going to move on to the consent agenda. I think everybody's had a chance to take a look at it. If there's no questions, comments, concerns on that, I would ask for a motion for approval of the consent agenda and those items listed within.
Mr. Chairman, I move we accept the items on the consent agenda. Andy LaFever.
Chris Pittman seconds.
I have a motion and a second for approval of the consent agenda. Any further discussion on that? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Consent agenda is approved. We're going to move on to item G, Tucson Police Department petition. Morning, sir. Mr. Hargraves,
morning.
How are you?
Seth Hargraves, Assistant Attorney General. This agenda item G is a petition from the Tucson Police Department for a waiver of the 7-year restriction regarding past drug use. This applicant apparently consumed a marijuana brownie in May of 2015. It's kind of a similar situation to two petitions you had before you last month. The board considered that type of edible use of cannabis, which requires a 7-year wait period before they can apply. There's a petition here under your rules, R13-4-103G, to waive that 7-year restriction for this applicant. As I said, the board did approve two similar petitions last month. I have a memo in your packet kind of addressing this issue. I think someone is here from the Tucson Police Department to address you, but before that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments, Mr. Hargraves?
Okay, thanks.
Sure. Morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Captain Mark Kemp from the Tucson Police Department, and on behalf of Chief Magnus, I want to advance a request for a waiver and petition for recruit Cesar Christian Becerra, who's 21 years of age. During the background investigation, he admitted that he consumed a quote-unquote bit of a brownie containing marijuana, and he admitted to no other drug use. There was no other arrest history or no other things of concern, according to the background investigator. He submitted to a polygraph examination, which covered the area of his historical drug use, and that showed that he was being truthful. There was no significant reactions from his test. He is an exemplary cadet at the academy. He is presently maintaining both the standards and the values of expected of a Tucson police recruit. He was referred to the police department by some of our own members, both retired and active. So I'm asking that this indiscretion, this incident be looked at as indiscretion, and that he would benefit from a waiver from the board.
Thank you, sir. Any comments, questions, Captain? Okay. Thank you very much. And having that in the past, what we've done with this, keep that in mind as I ask for a motion.
Frank Mills said, I move that we accept Chief Magnus' request to waive the 7-year timeline for this recruit and allow him to be certified.
We have a motion.
And Medina second.
Officer Medina seconds. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Captain. And I think next time around we'll have the video for you, so you won't have to drive all the way here from Tucson.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here today. All right. Mr. Iyer, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm Marie Dreyer, your basic training manager. And before you, you should have the inspection report for Southeastern Arizona Training Academy.
We just call the agenda item first.
The agenda item is Southeastern Arizona Law Enforcement Training Academy Certification. Thank you, Mr. Dreyer.
You bet. You have the inspection report in front of you, as well as a board communication for you to consider whether or not you want to recognize them as an approved post academy. It is a wonderful place. If any of you have recruits that you want to send down there, I would recommend them. And also, well, I'll tell you about Arizona Western College when you get done with this one. Is there any questions that you have regarding this academy?
Questions, comments? Okay. So we need a motion for approval of what would the proper term be, I guess. It's right there. All right, go right ahead if you want to do that.
Okay, I'll make a motion. I move the board determine that the Southeastern Arizona Law Enforcement Training Academy through Cochise College meets all the requirements of R13-4-114 and R13-4-116, and the academy may provide the basic training required to receive certified peace officer status. Effective date of determination is retroactive to January 14, 2019, start date of the academy.
Well done.
Yeah.
Wow. Quite the motion there, buddy.
I'm pretty awesome. Don't make me repeat it.
Frank Mills said, I'll second the chief's eloquent motion.
Hey, I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries unanimously.
And if any of you want to take a lovely drive, they are going to graduate on May 9th at 1500 hours at the Douglas campus. And in regards to what Director Giordano spoke about with Arizona Western College, they have been an approved academy for many years, but they've done the extended academy, which is basically your 10-month or two-semester academy. They have now partnered up with UMFPD, so that was the facility he went down to the ribbon cutting for, and they started a regular academy on Monday. I have not spoke to Director Caldwell since they started. I'm sure he's very busy, but he's very excited because he's getting some help.
Quick question. So how long was the process of getting to this point from the time they decided they wanted an academy to today?
It varies, and the reason that the first one with Sialita, if you're looking at how long it took, because of the different partners and trying to get the documents from the different entities as to where they're going to hold specific training is typically what takes the most. I schedule the SMEs whenever they're ready for them to go down and inspect, for instance, where they're going to do their driver training, where they're going to do firearms and defensive tactics and that type of thing. But as soon as they tell me where they're ready, we try to schedule someone to go down and inspect it. So it just varies.
Can you give me a ballpark? Years, months, decades?
It can. Some of them have started. We've had academies that have given me the heads up, say 2014, and it isn't until 2017 that they actually get the ball rolling. So it depends.
Thank you.
That. Sorry.
No problem. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Don't read into that, anybody.
Just being honest. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for everything you're doing. I appreciate it. All right. Looks like we're next into our final action cases. And case number one will be continued. So we're getting into case number 218-121. Mr. Hargreaves.
Yes, thank you. This is a petition for rehearing by Alicia Valdesea, former Tucson police officer. Ms. Valdesea was involved in an off-duty DUI in August of last year, subsequently resigned from the Tucson Police Department. The board voted to initiate proceedings last November. After the board had done so, Ms. Valdesea had been in discussions with board staff about a consent agreement. She was sent a proposed consent for a one-year suspension. When she did not return that or request a hearing and came to the board for final action, at which time the board voted to revoke certification. She's asking the board for basically reconsideration of that decision, and she indicated that she did not receive the consent agreement that was sent to her, and she would have signed it had she received it. This was a case involving an extreme DUI. The BAC results were 0.199 and 0.201. Historically, the board has not revoked for that type of conduct for an extreme DUI unless there was collision, injury, or dishonesty involved. Normally, the suspension that the board would impose was in line with a 1 year. The state has no objection to the board granting a review based upon the history of what this board has done in past cases. We can't confirm whether or not she received the draft consent that was sent her, but she has since sent it back signed for a 1 year suspension consistent with other past board actions. So the state, again, has no objection. We'd recommend the board consider granting her request for review, rescind the prior revocation, and instead accept the signed consent agreement for a 12-month suspension beginning August 30th, 2018, and ending August 29th, 2019. Happy to answer any questions.
Yes, sir.
So is that considered a rehearing?
Well, it's a review. You're granting a review, doing a review of the discipline imposed. If you agree to change it, it would be revoke, rescind the prior revocation and accept the consent for a suspension in lieu of the revocation.
And we can do that all that today?
Yes, you can do it in separate motions or a single motion.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments?
So in theory, we're just going to allow her to still apply to be a police officer with whatever agency she wants after the suspension period is over?
Correct.
All right.
Any other comments, questions? Having none, may I have a motion?
Well, if I use this one, it looks like we do both at the same time, so correct me if I'm wrong. So I move the grant respondent's request for review and rescind the board's prior action revoking peace officer certification to accept the signed consent agreement for 12-month suspension for peace officer certification beginning August 30th, 2018, ending August 29th, 2019. It's Alan Rodfeld, for the record.
Chuck Ryan, second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion on the motion? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you,
Mr. Hargraves. We're moving on to case number 18-150. Mr. Henry. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. Case number 18-150. On January 16, 2019, the board voted to initiate proceedings against Mr. Ricardo Flores' certification status. Mr. Flores is a former police recruit with the City of Phoenix Police Department. A notice of the complaint was sent to Mr. Flores by regular and certified U.S. mail. The regular notice has not been returned, and the certified notice could not be served and was returned unclaimed. Mr. Flores has made no contact with Arizona Post personnel. In summary, on September 18, 2018, Mr. Flores overslept and failed to report to the police academy as scheduled. Mr. Flores's absence, or as a result of Mr. Flores's absence, his recruit training officer tried several times to call him to no avail. Mr. Flores arrived approximately 2 hours late for his class and then provided false information to his training officer and his class sergeant. Mr. Flores told his chain of command that he had car trouble, a dead battery, and was stranded at a gas station. Mr. Flores continued to lie and said that he could not locate his supervisor's phone number. At this time, Mr. Flores' chain of command advised him that they would verify the veracity of his claim and check the video surveillance of the gas station. At that time, Mr. Flores then admitted he lied about having a dead battery, being stranded at the gas station, and not being able to locate the supervisor's phone number. Mr. Flores later admitted to fabricating the story in order to conceal that he had overslept. Mr. Flores was subsequently terminated with the Phoenix Police Department. Research by Arizona Post staff determined that in the past, similar fact-based circumstances, the board action resulted in no action, agency discretion, to denial of certification.
Thank you, sir. Comments, questions? Having none, a motion, please.
Mr.
Chair, I'll make a motion that we accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and deny certification.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Chris Pittman, I'll second that.
A motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Henry, we're moving on to the next, 18158.
Mr. Chair, I've accused myself. I'm a broad bill.
You were on a roll, too.
I was doing great. Everybody else is talking.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Case number 18158. On January 16, 2019, the board voted to initiate proceedings against peace officer certification held by Mr. Adolfo Gonzalez, a former police officer with the City of Phoenix. A notice of the complaint was sent to Mr. Gonzalez by regular and certified mail. On February 6, Mr. Gonzalez signed the receipt for the certified notice. However, to date, has not requested a hearing. In summary, on November 22, 2018, Mr. Gonzalez left the Scottsdale Bar and later returned to this location after the bar had closed. Mr. Gonzalez believed he left a driver's license in the bar and wanted to re-enter the establishment, however, was stopped by security personnel. Mr. Gonzalez explained to security that he only wanted to search for his driver's license. The security personnel informed Mr. Gonzalez that he would have to call the next day regarding the matter and again was denied entry. According to security personnel, Mr. Gonzalez then displayed a police badge and wanted to speak with the bar's manager. Re-entry to the bar was once again denied, and Mr. Gonzalez refused to leave the premises. As a result, the Scottsdale police were summoned. When questioned by Scottsdale officers, they noted Mr. Gonzalez appeared to be highly intoxicated. They said Mr. Gonzalez exhibited slurred and repetitive speech, had the odor of an intoxicating beverage, and displayed uncooperative behavior. According to the Scottsdale police report, Mr. Gonzalez acknowledged that he was a police officer, but refused to present his credentials. The officers made more requests to see Mr. Gonzalez's police identification, and Mr. Gonzalez continued to refuse to present his credentials and denied the fact that he presented the badge to security personnel. At approximately 2:40 in the morning, Scottsdale police officers arrested Mr. Gonzalez on suspicion of impersonating a police officer. Once searched, the officers found his Phoenix police badge, his Phoenix police credentials, and his missing driver's license. Mr. Gonzalez then admitted that he graduated from the police academy 1 week earlier and now is assigned to the Phoenix Post Academy. The Scottsdale officers then summoned their police supervisor and they decided to release Mr. Gonzalez and not arrest him. They determined that the incident would be documented and in the police report for informational purposes. After being released, Mr. Gonzalez remained argumentative on the scene, and Mr. Gonzalez started video recording the officers with his cell phone before ultimately leaving. On November 26, the Phoenix Police Department initiated an internal investigation, and Mr. Gonzalez elected not to participate. As a result, Mr. Gonzalez subsequently resigned. Research on the matter determined that past similar fact-based circumstances, the board action resulted in suspension up to revocation.
Comments, questions?
Just, Mr. Chairman, it's interesting because there's no crime committed. The guy's obviously drunk and made a lot of bad decisions, but I don't see a crime being committed in here at all. Just point that out.
Okay. Anything else?
Mr. Chairman, Ben, what have we done in the past? You said revoked or suspended?
Suspended or up to revocation. And that's correct. It was not charged for a crime.
Any other comments or questions? If none, may I have a motion?
Frank Milstead, so I accept the findings of fact and conclusion of law, and I would move that we impose a sanction of a 2-year suspension certification dating from the time of the incident on November 22nd, 2018 to November 22nd, 2020.
At that time, he was still employed during that time period. He didn't resign until November 26th, so your suspension period would cover
Sorry.
The time when he was still certified or employed.
We can just adjust it then. Thanks, Seth.
from November 26, 2018 to November 26, 2020.
Chuck Ryan, second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Thank you, sir. All right, we are moving into the new cases. Mr. Caldwell, good morning, sir. We are on 17173.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Actually, I'd like to present both of my cases on the agenda at the same time, Officers McNeil and Grill, because they are related. If that's okay with you,
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, that's fine. We'll also look at 18-071.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Prior to working for Mesa PD, Officers McNeil and Gribble were with the Seattle Police Department. They began a relationship and moved in together in 2015. In 2016, they both began the hiring process with the Mesa Police Department. As part of this process, they were both specifically asked if they had been involved in any domestic incidents that includes threats, physical contact, or damage to property. Neither disclosed any incidents involving the other person. In 2016, both Officers McNeil and Gribble were hired by Mesa PD. They moved in together to a house in Gilbert. In July 2017, Officer Gribble reported that Officer McNeil assaulted her in their home on or about August 14, 2016. Officer Gribble recorded the incident with her cell phone. According to investigators, the video appears to show McNeil and Gribble in a heated argument. Then Gribble pushes or makes physical contact with McNeil. McNeil then strikes Gribble. Officer Gribble said that he pushed McNeil. I'm sorry, Officer Gribble said she pushed McNeil because she perceived him as advancing on her and possibly a threat to her. Officer McNeil denied assaulting Officer Gribble, saying he only reacted to Officer Gribble striking him. Officer Gribble also reported domestic violence-related incidents prior to being hired by Mesa PD. These included the breaking of household items, physical assaults, and McNeil throwing her pet cat against a wall during an argument. She also claimed that on two occasions, Officer McNeil put a gun to his head and threatened to shoot himself. A Gilbert PD detective investigated the matter and submitted charges for both McNeil and Gribble, but they were declined. A Mesa PD command-level review of the IA investigation noted Officers McNeil and Gribble possibly withheld information regarding their history of domestic incidents during the hiring process with Mesa in 2016. McNeil said Officer Gribble's description of these incidents was exaggerated or false. Officer Gribble said that the abuse she suffered during her relationship with McNeil was very traumatic, and any potentially contradictory information during her background investigation was not an attempt to be dishonest or untruthful. Officer McNeil was terminated from Mesa for failure to meet probationary standards, and Officer Gribble still works there. I'd be glad to answer any questions that y'all might have about these two cases.
No comments or questions. Motion, please.
Frank Melstead, I make a motion that we leave this to agency discretion.
Can we just be clear which case we're talking about? Probably take handle each one
sure.
with a separate motion.
Thank you, Seth. So the motion for Mr. McNeil would be initiate proceedings, and the motion for Ms. Gribble would be agency discretion.
Instead of, no, just one, each case at a time, so we'll do the first one, motion, second vote, next case, motion, second vote.
Got it. So, once again, the motion for McNeil is to initiate proceedings.
Chris Pittman, second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion on that motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Now we're looking at the next one.
Frank Milstead, again, agency discretion for Ms. Gribble.
And that would be case 18-071. I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Caldwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the board.
Moving on to case number 19-032. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mike, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Mike Dalton with your compliance unit. This case involves former NAU police officer Tyler Davids. In February 10th of this year, Tyler was in Phoenix visiting his family. They had gone out for the evening to have some drinks and dinner, and they came back to his sister's apartment, continued socializing throughout the evening, and Tyler just kept drinking. Tyler was 24 at the time, not much of a drinker, no past problems with alcohol. Just had too much to drink that night and started to exhibit signs of possible medical emergency. He was going in and out of consciousness. Sometimes they thought he was actually stopping breathing. They had to wake him up. He was sitting down, kind of rolling over, threw up a couple of times, just very incoherent, out of it. They thought, the officers later on thought maybe he had drugs. That turned out to be not to be the case. It was alcohol. Anyway, they went ahead and called paramedics just for the medical part of it, just to get him evaluated. When Phoenix Fire showed up, Tyler said, no, I don't want any kind of treatment or evaluation. He just refused verbally, nothing physical. At that time, Phoenix thought, well, the fire department thought, well, it's an officer with NAU. Maybe Phoenix PD can convince him to calm down and get treatment. So Phoenix PD showed up, and they were unable to really get him to calm down in terms of getting treatment by fire. So fire left the scene. PD was still talking to him. The officer was in the couple of officers were in the room talking with him. Sister and brother were talking with Tyler. When Tyler mentioned a couple of different times that he was going to hurt his sister and brother, he told his sister at one time that he was, excuse my language, going to fuck her up. And then he told his brother a couple minutes later in the same kind of conversation that he was going to beat his ass. I did review the body-worn camera footage. It's hard to know that he was really even talking to anybody. He was just blurting out curse words. He was belligerent to everybody. He would say things that didn't make sense. He was incoherent. He would just respond. Sometimes he would respond in a nice way. A lot of times just in a really derogatory, belligerent way. Later on, during that same time frame in the bedroom, the decision was made to go ahead and arrest Tyler based on the two threats in front of the officers. When they hooked him up with the handcuffs, they were trying to help him up. He made comment, I'm going to kill you. He was still face down, kind of laying on the floor. It's hard to say if he was who he knew he was talking to. The officer said, no, you're not going to kill anybody. And they took him to the hospital, where basically he maintained that kind of belligerent attitude with medical staff. He never got violent physically with anybody. He uttered some curse words at the medical staff. They went ahead and drew his blood. He had a 0.261 blood alcohol content, no drugs on board. Sister and brother said, we're not prosecuting. We know he didn't mean it. He didn't even know who he was talking to, that type of thing. So they went ahead and released him to the sister and brother and submitted a report for threats, domestic violence, just for the sister and brother as victims. They did not list threats to the police officers for the I'll kill you comment. It was in the narrative, but not a charge. City prosecutor did not bring charges forward. They declined prosecution. Again, victims in this declined prosecution. When they got back to NAU, Sergeant sat down with them, with Tyler, asked him what happened. Tyler had no recollection of it. I had a conversation with Tyler later on. He had no recollection of it. He told the sergeant that he was extremely embarrassed, sorry, remorseful, because he did see a bit of the video, and he asked him just to shut it off because he was so embarrassed. So sister and brother said, this is not Tyler. The sergeant said, this is not Tyler. In the interview, you could hear him say, this is not what we have observed of you. So apparently it was just his reaction to too much alcohol. There was no criminal charges to follow up with that. Happy to answer any other questions. I should say that he resigned probation. He was in the second phase of FTO.
Comments, questions?
Well, I just have a question, I guess. So in the past, we've had this kind of behavior with no real victims, no charges, and just a one-time event. What have we done in the past?
Well, I didn't research the charging board aspect of it. In the past, personally, I can tell you anecdotally, I've gone both ways on this. I've written in de minimis language. I just went ahead and listed possible rule violations based on the threats and that they did write the report. That's all I can say from experience based.
But no, nothing other than verbal threat?
Correct.
Nothing physical?
Correct.
Okay. I make a motion, agency discretion. No further action. Alan Rosso.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Jamie Kelly, second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. We're moving on to 18086. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Arlene Heckel, one of your compliance specialists.
Captain Magana worked for the Somerton Police Department for 24 years. She was terminated on August 17, 2018. On September 5th, the chief of Somerton PD at the time went into Captain Magana's office looking for tasers. He wanted to reissue them to some new officers. He looked into a file cabinet and saw what he believed was evidence. So he went out and sent an email to all employees, including Captain Magana, to make sure that they didn't have any evidence in their office, and if they did have some, to get it into the property custodian so they could get it into the evidence room. On September 20th of 2017, the chief went back into Captain Magana's office. He looked in the file cabinet and saw some additional evidence. He contacted the Department of Public Safety for assistance in an investigation and an internal investigation. And when DPS got there, they looked, and they, because of the evidence that they saw, some drugs and some guns, they decided to do a criminal investigation at the time. The investigation showed that prior, Somerton PD was in an older building, and they had an evidence room, which there was an evidence custodian and the chief of police that had access to that, but they also had temporary file cabinets that the officers would put their evidence in, and then the evidence custodian would take the evidence and either send it to DPS lab, or they would she would put it into the evidence room or return it to the owners, but the evidence custodian was responsible for that evidence once it was put into those file cabinets. At the time, Captain Magana was the only detective for the department, and she became a detective during that time period, so she was the evidence custodian for the department. In mid-2007, they moved to a new facility. When they moved those temporary filing or temporary storage for the evidence into her office and not into the evidence room. During the investigation, no one could remember why that was done, but those file cabinets with all that evidence was moved into her office instead of the evidence room. During the investigation, there was a search warrant done on these file cabinets in her office, and 53 items were seized. All of them were linked to cases that occurred from 2005 to 2007, which at the time she was the evidence custodian. Many of these cases were waiting to have the evidence sent to DPS for either fingerprint analysis, DNA analysis, drug analysis. A lot of those cases were that. They checked, none of them had ever been sent to DPS. They had just made, they were just there in the file cabinet and never had, nothing had ever happened with them. And this was in 2017 when they found this. Criminal charges were filed, but they were turned down on her. So then the chief of Somerton decided that there needed to be an administrative investigation, which he contacted the Department of Transportation Office of Inspector General. So in April of 2018, some employees at the Somerton Police Department were cleaning out the office of Captain Magana because she had been on administrative leave during the criminal investigation. And when they were going through her office and her desk, they found original documents for an additional 68 cases. And these were original citations, original victims' rights information, reports, things like that. Some of them were when she was the investigating officer and she just never completed the report, never turned in the citations. She had now moved from lieutenant and to commander, so she was also a supervisor, so many of the officers had turned in their reports and their evidence for her to approve and submit for charges through the court system, and they were all sitting there. Basically, there had nothing had been done with those 68 cases. Those cases ranged from 2006 to 2017. On July 10th of 2018, Captain Magana was interviewed on this, on all these cases. She didn't remember any of the individual cases. She basically said she didn't know why she hadn't done what she needed to do as the evidence custodian or as a supervisor. She said there was no reason for it, and she would take full responsibility. She was terminated from the Somerton Police Department, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
Frank Elstead, I move that we initiate proceedings.
Chuck Ryan, second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to the next. Thank you, Ms. Hackett. We're moving on to the next one, 19023.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. Steve Jacobs, compliance specialist. First case that I'm presenting to you today, 19-023, Nathan D. Gilson, formerly with the Phoenix Police Department. This was a recruit in the academy who was dismissed for what they believed to be dishonesty. The first one stemmed from the assignment was that each recruit was tasked with configuring their own exercise equipment, since putting their names and so forth on it, and they were supposed to do this on their own, individual work. It was found that this particular recruit had his wife do it for him. He denied initially having his assistance from anyone in preparing his uniform, but it was because of a posting on Facebook, it was discovered that that was not true. The second event was as a result of the first one. He was given discipline that he had to write a paper on integrity and then present an oral presentation to his classmates on that. The day arose that he was to do his presentation. He got up and spoke about everything but integrity. And they looked at the notes that he had supposedly prepared. There were six bullet statements having to do with integrity that he did not mention one in his presentation. When they talked to him, he had told before the presentation, he had told the instructors that he had completed his written assignment and had prepared his oral presentation, a fact later determined not to be the truth. Are there any questions?
No questions. May I have a motion?
This may be the dumbest thing I've ever seen anybody do. This is a record setter. This is crazy.
Is that the motion?
I mean, are you kidding me?
So, yeah, it was the if we can put this in.
Sorry, I didn't know. That was my inside voice.
Now, actually, I disagree with it. So, we're not really talking about the fact that he didn't prepare for his presentation and we're not bringing it before the board. This is about false statements about who prepared his uniform.
Yes.
And I guess that point, it still comes back to, does the board really think we should spend our time with dismissals from the academy for those kinds of infractions?
That's a decision you have to make, sir. Okay. I'm tasked with presenting the issues to you.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, there's obviously some veracity issues involved, but how we got here is mind-numbing. I'm going to make a motion that we leave this up to agency discretion.
I'll second that.
I have a motion and a second from Chief Rodbell. And is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Jacobs. We're moving on to 18017.
Yes, this involves a former Mojave County Sheriff's Deputy, Michael J. Lyons, who back in 2017 became involved in an issue on the highway when he was off duty. This developed. He did call 911 and reported the matter, but it ended up in a parking lot where there was a confrontation. There were differing stories in what happened, a lot of similarities between the two parties that were involved on what happened, but also differences, and what actually happened could not be determined at this point. Also, during this review of this matter, it came to the attention of Post that this person had made application with other departments. And although each department had, during their background process, made a records request from agencies where this person had lived, the Orange County Sheriff's Department only responded to one, and this was the Glendale Police Department. They responded with a report where this person was named as a suspect on an aggravated assault with a vehicle. When this person was 17 years of age, it was reported that he was driving through a rival high school's parking lot with some passengers in his car, and that he deliberately struck a pedestrian. I met with this individual. He denied involvement in this or any knowledge of this event ever happening. When you look at the report, the investigating officer made comment that he never made contact with Officer Lyons regarding this matter, but the case had been referred to juvenile justice. Through his counsel, attempts were made to obtain records out of California from the juvenile criminal division. Not only would they not respond, they would neither confirm nor deny that there was any investigation or any such event occurred. If you notice, and I believe it's in paragraph 7 of my overview, I do not believe at this point that there's enough information to go forward, but recommend that if this person does make application in the future, that we work with that department to ensure these questions hopefully can be resolved. Are there any questions?
So the subtext of that is resolve in the future?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Frank Melstead, I recommend we resolve this at future date.
Second. I have a motion and second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Ms. Waite, we are on 18157 with Carl Hamniptua.
Very good, sir. I will not try to do that. I will just refer to him as Carl, if that's okay. All right with you. Lori Waite, one of your compliance specialists. Carl, formerly with Winslow Police Department. On October 6th of 2017, Carl was off duty and he was turkey hunting with his 14-year-old son. An anonymous person reported to Game and Fish of two untagged wild turkeys dead behind a tent at a campsite. So Officer Thompson with Game and Fish decided to respond. He did find the two dead, untagged turkeys behind a campsite, but nobody was present at the campsite at that time. So within about an hour, Carl showed up at camp, and Officer Thompson made contact with him. When asked, Carl confirmed that the tent site was his, and he had been turkey hunting with his son that day. When questioned by Officer Thompson, Carl was less than truthful on more than one occasion when asked if he had harvested any turkeys that day, stating that he had not, and denied knowledge of the two turkeys that were behind his camp. But after further questioning, Carl admitted he had shot the two turkeys without valid game permit and failed to tag them immediately as required by state law. So Game and Fish cited him for three different violations. He started making payment on those citations. However, he stopped making payments, so that resulted in them issuing a warrant for his arrest. When he was brought in for questioning about this incident by his agency, he called the court while he was in the interview room and paid the remaining balance that was owed, resulting in a quashed warrant. He was terminated from Winslow Police Department on November 29th of last year. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I just have a quick question. I'm not sure if I understood. He did have a valid tag for the turkeys. He didn't tag them?
One of them was, the tag he had was not, he could not use it for that particular turkey. The tag that his son had could be used for that particular turkey, but they had failed to tag the turkeys that were behind the camp.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions, Colin?
Question. What was his tag for?
It was for not during that particular hunt. He had some kind of different hunting permit license. I don't know. I'd have to go back and research.
It looks like it was for a turkey tag, but not for turkey there.
At that particular location.
Different
yes.
Location.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, our concern is really about lying to the officer in the investigation.
That's
okay.
Our concern. And the officer asked him multiple times, you know, giving him an opportunity to come clean, and he failed to do that.
And that at $350 for 4 hours.
Something about a turkey. Okay. Any other questions or comments from Ms. Waite? May I have a motion?
I'm going to make a, Frank Meltzer, make a motion to initiate proceedings just based on the veracity issues.
I'll second.
Motion second. Sorry. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Waite. We're moving on to 19-012.
Yes, sir. Last case. This is on Nicholas Nance, formerly with the Arizona Department of Public Safety. In September of 2018, Nance was interviewed by investigators of the Professional Standards Unit at the agency in reference to a multitude of issues ranging from failing to attend court, failing to attend mandatory trainings as directed by his supervisor, and untruthfulness with his supervisor, Sergeant Bunn. So we're going to be talking about two different incidents real quick. They both are scheduled wet labs that he was required to attend, one in October of 2017 and one in January of 2018. So the first lab was scheduled for October 12, 2017. He'd been instructed to go by his sergeant, but 2 days before the training, he told his sergeant he couldn't go because he couldn't find child care for his son. Nance disclosed to investigators he was able to find a babysitter at the very last minute on the day of the wet lab, but instead of attending the training, which started at 7 p.m., he decided to go to a hockey game instead, which also started at 7. Investigators subsequently learned after their interview with Nance that he had actually bought his hockey tickets for the October 12th date shortly before 1400 hours that day. So they interviewed him a second time. He told them that he was able to find child care within an hour of the game starting at 7 o'clock, advising he purchased the tickets after he dropped his son off with the babysitter, which would have been around 6 p.m. When challenged by investigators that they knew he'd purchased the tickets earlier in the day, he initially tried to deny this information, denying that he had bought them shortly before 1400 hours. But eventually conceded that he had lied to investigators and their information was accurate. Nance advised investigators he bought the tickets prior to having confirmed child care in hopes that he would be able to find somebody to watch his son instead of going to training as instructed by his sergeant. So the second incident is another wet lab scheduled for January 12, 2018. He failed to attend that one as well, and when Sergeant Bunn asked him at a later date if he attended, he said no, he had forgotten about the training, so he did not attend. But Sergeant Bunn had received information that another DPS officer may have run into Nance at the hockey game on January 12th, the same day he was supposed to attend a wet lab. Sergeant Bunn spoke with this officer, who confirmed that he saw Nance at the hockey game. The officer advised that Nance called him later in the evening and confirmed that he was supposed to be at a wet lab instead of at the hockey game. Nance resigned in lieu of termination from the agency in November of last year for a multitude of issues to include untruthfulness. Be happy to answer any questions.
Hello.
Frank Milstead, I'm going to recuse myself.
Alan Rago makes a motion to initiate proceedings.
Chuck Ryan, second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Waite. And last on the agenda, Mr. Giordano, any further future items?
No, sir, unless the board has something they'd like us to take a look at.
Mr. Chair, real quick, just a reminder, sir, to the board that the fallen officer memorial is Monday, May 6th.
Thank you very much. And with that and nothing else, the meeting's adjourned.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thanks.
I think that's it.